got me a job down at the local mill. Work dried up, not a mill is still. I can pay my bills. Repo man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, kids, a car, and a boat. Now things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working. We're just not working anymore.
Okay, hello folks, welcome to the June 20th, 2009 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you on WFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at www.wft.org. Before we get into today's show, we want to thank our underwriters, and here's Tom with a list of those.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A Democratic Union BMWE celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Well, I'm your host, David Johnson, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news headlines headlines in this week's issue of the Labor Hour Culture Corner for us. Tom's brand new poem for this week, first heard here, recited on the Illinois World Labor Hours, entitled Tax the Rich. Also here with us today is co-host Bob Plesny, our technical expert and advisor, who we really wish was here last week, and who will have some news and banner for us. Also, we have a couple guests in the studio here, Jermaine Light of the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union, and Wayne Johnson. We're going to be doing sort of a rerun of last week's show, in which we had technical difficulties, in which Wayne Johnson, who's a local libertarian activist, is going to be debating with John Ryman from Oakland, California, who's a self-described socialist. So stay tuned for that, the last half of the hour. Now, here's Tom this week. Well, before Tom reads this week's news, Bob, I think you've got an urgent, timely public service announcement.
Yeah, Dave, there's a community rally going on today, Saturday, June 20th. It starts at 11:30 a.m. It takes place in front of United Way of Champaign County. That's 404 West Church Street, Champaign. And they're asking you to wear red. Bring your pillow, sleeping bag, or blanket. And your message is, where will I wake up tomorrow? You should put people first. And this is in regard to the state of Illinois taking away critical funding for the most vulnerable members of our community by approving a budget that provides only half of the funding the Department of Human Services needs for community disability and mental health programs. So,
okay.
And that's today at 11:30, goes to about 1 o'clock, and they're asking wear red, and that's in front of the United Way, Champaign County.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, Tom.
Unions worldwide are welcoming the historic introduction of a universal government-funded paid maternity leave scheme covering the majority of Australian women and their families. According to Sharon Burrow, president of the Australian Council of Trade Unions, the campaign to win this essential piece of social infrastructure has taken 30 long years. According to another spokesman for the ACTU, this is a major achievement for thousands of women and men who have worked so hard to bring this scheme to fruition. The scheme will cover hundreds of thousands of women in lower-paid jobs with poor job security, especially in hospitality and retail, where there's been very limited access to paid maternity leave. ACTU Treasurer Wayne Swan confirmed that a universal paid maternity leave scheme will go ahead with funding to be committed in the near future. Burrow said the 18-week scheme would give mothers time to bond with and breastfeed their babies without financial stress forcing them back to work too early, sometimes within a few weeks, as is currently the case. Said Mr. Burrow, the ACTU and unions will continue to help working women bargain for measures to help balance their work and family responsibilities. Illinois' unemployment rate hit 10.1% in May, a double-digit milestone that has not been seen in more than 25 years. The total number of jobless now stands at 671,400, the most since June of 1983, when Reaganomics crippled the nation's economy. However, there are some signs that the pace of job losses may be slowing down a bit. Some 17,400 jobs were lost in May, mostly in manufacturing, compared to the 24,500 job losses in April. The unemployment rate nationwide was 9.4% in May, with some 14.5 million unemployed workers. According to Dr. Edward Stewart, an economics professor at Northeastern Illinois University, this current recession likely will fundamentally change the economy, just like the recession of 1982 and 83 did when too many factories had to close for good. That, of course, means that too many unemployed workers will never be able to return to their old jobs and must consider gaining new skills once this recession has eased. According to Dr. Stewart, this recession is much more complicated and much more systemic than the one a quarter century ago, and that is why he is pessimistic about the economic stability returning very soon. About 175 contract employees of the Lincoln's Challenge Academy in Rantoul are nervously awaiting word as to whether they will still have their jobs after the 1st of July. The Lincoln's Challenge Academy program at the former Chanute Air Force Base is facing state budget cuts that may at least delay its scheduled reopening on July 1st. According to a report released by the Illinois National Guard last week, the shaved-down budget lawmakers passed in May will require major cuts in state contract services and in state employees and in state programs, unless a new source of revenue can be found in the coming weeks. In the meantime, about 175 contract employees at the 22-week program for Illinois high school dropouts face being laid off and don't know if they will be called back anytime soon or if they'll be called back at all. The next Lincoln's Challenge Academy class was expected to include some 500 to 600 cadets, but if the present budget proposals are implemented, it may be necessary to cut the Lincoln's Challenge Academy programs completely. The Illinois National Guard, primary sponsor of the Lincoln's Challenge Academy, has been ordered to cut its budget by $4 million next year, and that money is almost exactly what it takes to operate Lincoln's Challenge programs for a year. And finally, the Champaign Park District's Festival of the Summer, the 39th annual Taste of Champaign Urbana, kicked off yesterday in Westside Park, directly west of downtown Champaign. The festival raises money for the Champaign Park District's Youth Scholarship Fund, which provides opportunities for youths who are unable to participate in recreational programs because of economic hardship. This year, 27 food vendors will be set up in the park, and we'll have many foods to choose from elegant desserts to spicy barbecues. Visitors to the event can sample dishes from around the world, or they can indulge in the local favorites. All the restaurants involved were reviewed by a committee to ensure that the particular dishes they offer are the best of their kind in Champaign-Urbana. The organizers have also lined up free concerts from a variety of bands to meet everyone's taste. Local and regional entertainers throughout the Midwest will offer music for the whole family on two music stages. Street parking is available throughout downtown Champaign, including the new parking garage at Hill and Neal Streets. Handicapped accessible parking is located at Emmanuel Memorial Episcopal Church at 100 North Park Street, the corner of Park and Church Streets. State and Elm Streets will be closed during the event. In accordance with city ordinances, dogs and other domestic animals will not be allowed at the Taste of Champaign-Urbana. Dave?
Okay, Bob, what do you have for us today?
Well, a little follow-up on Tom's story there about jobless rates. I got a story from Friday. It says 48 states and the District of Columbia post unemployment rate rises in May, while only one state, Nebraska, registers a decrease. Michigan once led the nation with 14.1% jobless rate, up from 12.9% a month earlier, followed by Oregon, 12.4%, and that was up as well. And 13 states have rates above 10%. The one state that posted a decline was Nebraska, and that was a 0.1% decline. So,
okay. I got a couple here. Ameren just can't explain away near-record profits of more than $600 million in 2008, but that's exactly what the company is trying to do in its campaign for a $226 million rate hike for electrical customers, only 8 months after it slapped customers with an additional $160 million increase. In light of this profitable history, Ameren has resorted to some bizarre talking points to justify yet another increase to the rates it charges to deliver power and natural gas to homes. Too many people aren't paying their bills, a company executive told the News Gazette on June the 10th, so Ameren needs to raise rates because too many people can't pay the current rates. Over the years, I've heard some creative excuses for a rate hike, but Ameren gets the prize on this one. And then going to some other stories here, no contract, no cookies. That's the slogan being carried by workers at New York City's Stella Diora Biscuit Factory. Those workers have been on the picket line for nearly a year now, and they're calling for international support. And you can send some support their way by contacting, well, basically going online to www.laborstart.org. And also, there's an interesting quote here. I can hire one half of the working class to kill the other half. That's American Railroad tycoon Jay Gould, why he wasn't worried about a strike back in 1886. And it's one of 1,300 questions from trade unionists and bosses, obviously, in the book Great Labor Quotations, which is our book of the week. We're sure this book will be a valuable resource if you need a quote for a speech or an article. In fact, it's already something of a bestseller. Learn more, order your copy. Again, you can go to www.laborstart.org. Okay, we're going to play a little music, and we'll be right back with Jermaine Light with a little update and a little, I guess, service announcement here from the IEA Teachers Union.
Bigger!
Okay, Bob, can you tell us a little about that song?
Of course, that was a Coco Taylor. And sadly, she passed away about 10 days ago. And they had a celebration of her life up there in Chicago last Friday. And that kicked off, well, it wasn't kicking off, but that was part of Chicago Blues Fest and whatnot. And I was up there last Saturday. Of course, there's always great musicians at the Chicago Blues Fest. For me, the highlight was being able to go to Chess Record Studios, which is now owned by Willie Dixon's family, and it's called Blues Heaven Foundation. And they had a gentleman from Mississippi playing up there, Grady Champion, and he actually did that song in the actual studio where it was recorded and stuff, and played a couple Willie Dixon songs and stuff. It was, to me, it was really meaningful to be up there and be in the actual studio where that song was recorded.
Wow. So. Well, just to let everyone know, Bob was on special assignment for the from WFT and Illinois World Labor Hour. But Bob's going to be doing, I'm going to be gone on Saturday, July 4th, and Bob and Tom are going to be doing a sort of a special labor hour that day, and a lot of it's going to be about the blues, because the blues is a very working class music of struggle and
sure is.
You know, getting by. So, yep. Okay, well, great. Now we're going to go to one of our in-guest studios here, Jermaine Light. Jermaine, welcome back to the Illinois World Labor Hour. How you been?
Just fine. We've been busy in Mahomet, though.
Okay, so what you been up to these days?
Well, we've been trying to convince our school board to sit down. When I say we, I mean the Mahomet Seymour Education Association, affiliated with Illinois Education Association.
Which is a teachers union, correct?
Which is
and
our
support staff,
right,
as well. Mm-hmm.
Teachers and support staff. That mm-hmm. includes teachers' aides, clericals, custodians, and bus drivers, as well as teachers. And we have a situation in Mahomet where we feel that we need a medical procedures policy. And we do not have an all-round district medical procedures policy for our school district. And most school districts around here do.
Okay. So basically that's where there will be issue currently is that there's not enough medical personnel like nurses to take care of injuries or sicknesses, and the school districts are relying on non-medical people like secretaries and other people to do first aid and administer medicine. Is that correct?
And to do, yes, to administer medicines and like prescription medicines as well as insulin shots, and which is a prescription medicine. And then that's the problem. And then what we want to do is we want to sit down at the table. We've issued three demands to bargain this. We are not in contract bargaining now. There are no other issues. This is the one issue we've issued a demand to bargain about that we've been refused three times now.
Okay.
Okay? So the district is refusing to sit down and bargain a new medical, we don't have one yet, a medical procedures policy.
Okay.
Okay. Oh,
well, you know, this is, I can just see all sorts of legal liability over this. I mean, I cannot imagine that the school districts would be negligent on this, if you will.
It just blows my mind that the district won't, you know, cover themselves. I mean, it puts everybody at risk, but mainly the students.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so worried that something bad is going to happen to a student if we don't do something, and, you know, everybody's going to be sorry then.
Well,
no,
indeed.
I mean,
and it'll be too late. I mean,
right.
Because then you're going to have possibly a lawsuit or a loss of life, potentially, which would be the worst, of course.
Exactly.
But, okay. What are you advocating for listeners today on the Illinois Labor Hour? Is there like a meeting of sorts of something coming up here?
You bet. On Monday, there are two events that are associated with one another. One is at 6 o'clock in the evening, and that is Monday, June 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a rally, an informational meeting about what is going on, open to the community. When I say community, I do encourage anyone in Champaign, Urbana, or surrounding rural areas, whatever, to go to this rally and support the MSCA as well as find out what's going on. We do have some of our employees and staff live in outside of Mahomet, and there are people in other schools that ought to be informed about this situation, because this is not just a Mahomet Seymour schools problem.
Mm-hmm.
There are similar problems in many school districts throughout the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we want people to be informed region-wide, statewide about this. So that's one event. And then we are going to Caravan, and this rally is being held at Water Tower Park, also known as Brooks Warfel Park in downtown Mahomet, just a block south of the downtown district. And then we are going to caravan from there at around 6:30, 6:45 to the Mahomet Seymour High School, where the school board meeting is going to be held at 7 o'clock. and that's to be held in the high school library.
Okay. All right. So, again, that's Monday, June 22nd. So that's coming up here this Monday, 6 p.m. at the Water Tower Park in Mahomet for the rally, and then the subsequent caravanning to the school board meeting at the Mahomet Seymour, or at the Mahomet School, High School, in the library at 7 p.m.
So. Yes, and we have two places on the agenda. One, the usual Mahomet Seymour communications with the board, and then we have a separate place on the agenda for this issue, and we're going to have multiple speakers. So we would love to have some, and the public can also have input. That's a third place on the agenda. If the public, parents, citizens would like to speak out, mm-hmm. and or even some of our staff would like to utilize that area, you have to fill out a form and a sign-up sheet as you walk in the door, and then you will be allowed to speak in the public comment time.
Okay, very good. All right, thank you, Jermaine. And we're going to go now to the Cultural Corner with Tom Thomas's poem of the week, Tax the Rich.
Dog paddling through poverty while struggling to stay alive is not where anyone should be who lives upon this earthly hive. While choking on polluted air, we burn in ultraviolet light. Our planet soon may not be there unless we start to treat her right. Bombing the babies of the sand is something we should never do. It's time we people ran our land and dismissed the murderous crew. Illuminati they are called, but gutless scum is what they are. Their treachery needs overhauled, not just here but in lands afar. When Ron the Rat started to gnaw back in the year of 81, the death of our Constitution we saw. What Bush told Ron to do was done. And like a cancer eating at the very soul of liberty, the Illuminati grew fat, feeding upon our misery. They took our jobs, they've killed our kids, they laugh at us like we're funny. We cannot even work the skids, we're broke because they have our money. So what's wrong with social contracts between our government and us? When will the rich pay their taxes? Before our nation turns to dust? Tax the Rich was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on June 15, 2009, and was first recited live June 20, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Do you want to take college classes but haven't got the money? Why not join the Odyssey Project? The Odyssey Project is a free college-accredited course in the humanities offered to working-class and low-income adults in the Champaign-Urbana community. Classes meet twice a week from September to May from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Douglas Branch Library in Champaign. Tuition, books, buzz tokens, and childcare are all free. You'll take classes in art history, philosophy, U.S. history, and literature taught by the best faculty the University of Illinois has to offer. And once you graduate from the program, you'll receive 6 units of college credit that can be transferred to any college, including the University of Illinois and Parkland. So if you've ever wanted to go to college or go back to college, join us this fall. For more information, contact the Odyssey Project at 217-244-3344. 217-244-3344.
Okay, thank you. I think our guest Wayne has a little announcement as well.
On October the 9th, 10th, and 11th in DuQuoin, Illinois, we're going to have the Midwest Liberty Fest at the DuQuoin State Fairgrounds there. It's a nonpartisan event.
Stand by.
Featuring speakers, we have coming Bill Kaufman, the anti-war guy, Naomi Wolf, who's had the movie End of America and some books on liberty and feminism, Brooke Kelly, the internet sensation, Michael Badnarik, the Constitution teacher, R.J. Harris, and Rand Paul, who is Ron Paul's son. There's going to be a gubernatorial debate with all 5 major parties sending their people in. There's going to be breakout sessions on liberty and the law, some great bands, family-friendly event with camping, and some lively debate. I'd like to invite you all to attend the Midwest Liberty Fest October 9th, 10th, and 11th in DuQuoin, Illinois.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, John, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Well, we hear you loud and clear this week.
Great.
It turns out there were some other programs having technical problems as well, so it didn't make us feel real bad anyway, but glad you could make it. Okay, so we have John Ryman on the phone, calling from Oakland, California, and I'm going to have both you guests introduce yourselves again, because we're kind of doing a rerun of the last show, except I think we can kind of cut a little bit of the chase, because we got a little groundwork laid in the last show. So, John, why don't you start by introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name is John Ryman. I'm a former recording secretary and an expelled member of the Carpenters Union, Local 713. I'm a retired carpenter, and I'm a member of the Industrial Workers of the World, and I'm a lifelong Marxian socialist.
Okay, and our other guest, I should say, in this corner, Wayne Johnson.
My name is Wayne Johnson. I'm a veterinarian. I live here in Urbana. I've pretty much not been very much involved with politics, except for the past year through the through the Ron Paul campaign. I'm one of those people who might say that Dr. Paul cured their apathy, and I've been involved with the past year with trying to work with people to work on the issues to try to restore the Constitution, bring our country back, and restore real productivity to our society.
Okay, very good. Okay, John, I think I remember correctly, last time we kind of left off with, I asked the question of both you and Wayne as kind of to give a quick, a short little analysis of the problem that we've had. What's sort of the cause of this economic downturn? Do you want to start again and briefly make your statement, then I'll have Wayne, and then we can kind of maybe get into the meat of the matter, if you will.
Sure. I think that the cause, heart of the problem, is the laws of motion of the capitalist system itself, and which all production is based on production for immediate profit, and because immediate private profit, and because of that, capitalism has certain inherent contradictions. One is the tendency to overproduction. Simply put, that workers cannot buy back everything that they produce. There's also a tendency for the rate of profit to fall. That is the percentage of profit based on the investment. And because of these two tendencies, capitalism has an inherent tendency towards crises, and in particular towards speculative bubbles. And you've seen this right throughout the history of the United States. And I'd just like to make one point. You know, you've seen this massive increase in speculation and in finance capital in its importance in the U.S. economy. It just, I don't want to overburden you with statistics, but from 1950 until the year 2005, the percentage of total profits that finance capital was reaping in the United States went from 10% of total profits up to 50% of the total profits. That and their total share of the economy went up, but their total share is only slightly over 20% of the economy as a whole still today. And so what that means is that there's massive profits in speculation, much less profit as far as the rate of profit in actually producing stuff. And this is the reason for this massive speculative bubble that we've seen.
Okay, before I go get to Wayne here, I have one question real quick. I guess is, why is it that right at this point in time the crisis is severe, similar to the Great Depression that began in October of 1929? I mean, we've had lots of recessions between, let's say, in the last 80 years.
Well, if you look at what happened over the last 15 or 20 years, you've had a whole series of speculative bubbles developed. You had the stock market bubble, I believe, of the late 1980s. You had the savings and loan swindles. Then you had the high-tech bubble that bursted.
The dot-com,
A little bit less than. And one, if they had not done the same thing as they're doing now, just pumping more dollars into the economy, those different bubbles, the bursting of those speculative bubbles would have led to the same kind of crisis that we're facing now. But you can only, it's like curing a patient who's, curing a patient who's suffering from lethargy and just complete tiredness and exhaustion of the system by giving a methamphetamine. And yeah, you can keep that person going and going and going for a certain period of time, but at a certain point, the whole system crashes. That's what we're seeing today. And incidentally, I'd like to comment on a couple of points that Wayne had raised
okay.
last week.
John,
before,
let's...
you know, the telephone system went down, if
okay.
I may.
Okay, John, can you hold put those on hold? Because I want Wayne to make kind of his opening statement, and we can get back to those, okay? So, okay, Wayne, your turn.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, the I must say that I agree with several things that you said, particularly the business about the speculative bubbles. That this is absolutely the case, and absolutely has been what's going on. But the group that I would the theory that I suppose that I would most associate with would be the idea that these bubbles are created by simply pumping money into the system, that the Federal Reserve is continuing to print dollars, and these dollars that have basically nothing particularly to back them, that there's no real productivity in the system to that's backing these up, that these are simply speculative bubbles, not written, they don't represent anything in terms of real productivity. And so I feel like that the problem is that we must, you know, the solution is that we must be creating an environment that's conducive to real productivity, that the encouragement of these speculative bubbles doesn't produce anything. In fact, it only leads to bubbles that pop. And so we have to encourage real productivity in the economy, and we have to come to methods in which we can do that in a sustainable way.
Okay, John.
Well, you know, in the first place, I think that the people that come from the point of view that Wayne is representing, and most especially people like the Libertarian Party, that they really have a very selective memory as far as their understanding of history. Because way back before the Fed was even a thought in anybody's eye, I'm talking about back from the early or mid-19th century, all the way to 29, you had these different speculative bubbles and regular crashes of the economy. And so, this isn't just like some academic dispute between me and Wayne here, because the implications of what he's saying, and I tried to find it on his website again, but it's not there anymore, at least what I could find. But what he's basically advocating is a return to the policies of Herbert Hoover. And that's what stems from his analysis. And of course, that policy was a total disaster. So, I just don't think that the fiscal policies are an attempt of modern finance capital to get around this inherent tendency towards the mass speculation. Incidentally, every single major empire in the world, from the Dutch, the British, the Spanish, at the time that the empire was in decline, they experienced this sort of massive increase of speculation in finance capital.
Okay, well, Wayne, do you advocate the return to Hoover?
Well, you know, that's it's an interesting charge, but actually, the Federal Reserve was established in 1913, and so that was they were well in force during the Hoover administration, and it did seem that indeed if you compare the Hoover administration. And then then what happened after Hoover, and you compared, with the Bush administration and what's happening after Bush, that there's actually a great deal of comparison. I mean, Hoover actually decided that they would spend themselves out of this. They decided to spend themselves out of the Depression, and then basically the next guy that came in more or less continued those policies. Now, that's not what I'm suggesting at all, and Bush decided to come in with these bailouts and to bail these people out, and what we're seeing with the Obama administration is a continuation of the same. So I think that there's a great deal of comparison between Hoover and the following administration, and the Bush administration and the following administration for him. But No, I think it's the Federal Reserve that has created these bubbles that they've continued to, you know, with the, by lowering the interest rates, they allowed a lot of money to flow into the economy and created these speculative bubbles. So, John, what I'd like to, what is the alternative here? How do we get ourselves out of this? How do we create an environment that's conducive to real productivity? I think that we can agree that this financial speculation doesn't create anything except disaster. And so, how do we, in a useful way, how do we work toward an environment that really allows real productivity to occur?
Well, in the first place, I want to dispute what Wayne is claiming, because there was, as I said, financial speculative bubbles and crises back in the 19th century. The last one of the 19th century was, I think, 1898 or 96, something like that. And I saw on Wayne's website, I haven't seen it recently, but I did see it, and I've seen the same thing advocated by others. Basically, advocating the policy of just allowing everything to go bankrupt. And this is the policy of Herbert Hoover. I'd like to quote from Herbert Hoover's Secretary of the Treasury, Andrew Mellon. And maybe Wayne will tell us where, maybe it's still on his website, but here is what Mellon advocated. This is Hoover's Secretary of the Treasury. Liquidate labor, liquidate stocks, liquidate the farmers, liquidate real estate. He said it will purge the rottenness out of the system. That is exactly the free market ideology, and it was a complete disaster in 1929 and 1930 and 1931, and it would be a complete disaster now. There is no solution on the basis of capitalism for this. I mean, we've seen one, the kind of corporate liberal solution, which Obama and really George Bush before him is doing, which is bailing out the big banks and insurance companies and so on. The other solution, which is the libertarian Herbert Hoover solution, is let everything go bankrupt, and then supposedly that'll purge the rottenness out of the system. That is a disaster also. And I think the solution is to take, in the first place, we have to have a massive public works program. That's what World War II was, in effect, as far as the economy. But, of course, I'm not advocating a war public works program. A massive public works program to create alternative to develop alternative energy systems and so on, decent housing and that sort of thing. And on the other hand, we have to return to increase the taxes on the rich and on the big corporations whose taxes have been drastically cut over the last 4 or 5 decades. But on top of that, I would say you have to take the commanding heights of the economy, the big banks, the big corporations, General Motors, which is no longer commanding height, of course, take it out of private hands, nationalize it, and put it under public ownership, under the direct control and management of the workers themselves. And then, in a conscious and democratic way, plan the development of the economy. That really is the only solution. Capitalism has seen its day, just like feudalism did before it.
Okay, Wayne.
Well, you know, there's, you make some good points, but there are some points here that certainly I would disagree with. Now, I certainly agree with you that Bush is following the policy of Obama. Now,
Obama's following the policy of Bush.
Yeah, it's easy to get the kid too confused these days.
Yeah, right. I mean, you can hardly tell them apart, right?
The peas in a pod.
Yeah. The question is here is whether or not you allow people to. The problem that I have with some of the things that you suggest is that they don't allow people to exercise their intuition and their creativity. That if you are controlling if you're going to dictate what the society does, then where is the room for people to actually express their personal creativity and their liberty? And that's what really has made the United States fairly profitable, profitable in terms of that there's been some good for the people, because people were actually able to have this initiative and to exercise it. Now you bring in more and more government controls. It makes the people feel like that. Well, you know, why should I do this? Why should I think about that? Because they're really, it takes away the incentive from people. So that I think that people have to have incentive, and you know that they perhaps it could come from from basic altruism, but. And, you know, it seems to be more like things like need that tend to drive people. Now, what do you say? You know, how do you exercise this government control society and still keep people's initiative and the exercise of their personal genius in the system?
Well, what? Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. What Wayne is really advocating is the incentive. He may not personally feel this way, but this is the practical consequence of what he's advocating, is the incentive to avoid having to sleep underneath the freeway overpasses. That is the incentive that the overwhelming majority of working class people in this country feel, the incentive to avoid being homeless, to avoid seeing their kids going hungry, and so on. And what I'm saying is, for the great majority of workers, there's an inherent tendency to want to produce as efficiently as they possibly can. And in fact, the great innovations that we've seen, the incentive was not to make more money. The incentive was a certain curiosity and a desire to contribute to society. But the idea that incentive, that personal freedom and incentive is what drives our society forward, in this society, which is controlled by a tiny handful of giant corporations that dominate everything and control everything from the music we listen to the air we breathe to what kind of food we eat. It's just, what Wayne is really doing here is he has just proven the theory of the physicists that there are two parallel universes, because he is living in a completely different universe on a completely different planet from the one that the overwhelming majority of workers live on.
Well, John, assuming just for a moment that, let's say, I'm not arguing that creativity and curiosity doesn't have a play, but let's just say that, you know, a lot of people are motivated, and, you know, beyond, of course, not being homeless and having enough food is, I guess Wayne was trying to imply, I believe, that your solution involved that everything would be run by bureaucrats from a central government, but I believe you were advocating actually that the workers themselves would own the auto companies and the large banks. Is that correct or not?
Yeah, the other implication of that argument, and we've heard it over and over again, is that basically the working class is incapable of running society. That you either have a system like we have here dominated by the giant corporations, or a system like the old Soviet Union dominated by these bureaucrats. And I'm not advocating either. I think that the only solution, as you say, is for the working class to control production, to consciously plan things out, and to control production in that way. And that would give a million times the incentive and the individual stimulus to individual creativity to what we have under the present system. But the other thing is, what is the alternative? Wayne's alternative, on the other hand, there's the corporate liberal alternative of Bush and Obama, on the one hand. On the other hand, there's the alternative that the far right believes in, which is the Herbert Hoover policies. Both of those are a complete disaster, and looming in the background, of course, is the environmental crisis. That's what our so-called individual incentive system has led us to.
Okay, Wayne.
Well, you're painting me with a fairly broad brush there, and I'm not sure that I resemble everything that you have suggested there, that or even represent them everything that I'm suggesting there. But the idea behind letting something like GM, which has been, in my opinion, corrupt, has been there's been obvious, if you watch the GM stock over the past several years, there was obvious there's been what I would call obvious fraud in the promotion somehow of GM. I don't know what they've been doing, if they've been painting the tape, or so there's some kind of financial chicanery going on in propping GM up. Why not let GM fail and let the means of productivity, the equipment, the things that are there, why not let it flow to to someone who is going to do a better job with it. Now, if that's a workers group, if that's a another person with an idea about what to do with it, you know, why not let that why not let that thing go bankrupt? You know, rather than us subsidizing a faulty and corrupt system.
And how about Chase Bank, AIG, the entire financial, all those banks that are that would have gone under, you would advocate letting them fail too, right?
Absolutely.
So that is the Herbert Hoover policy then. And it was a total disaster. That is the policies that I was quoting of Andrew Mellon. Liquidate the banks, liquidate labor, and so on. And if that means that you have to have new Hoovervilles, not just with tens of thousands, but with millions and many millions, then so be it.
Well, this is, I think we're coming down to some, you know, some brass tacks here, if you will. Both Wayne and you, and as well as us here, and most of us in the studios here, all oppose the bank bailouts.
Right.
Okay. Now, the question was, should the banks be, I mean, you definitely not bail them out. So then the question is, do you let them fail, or do you intervene with the with taxpayer money and then give control to, say, the workers?
Or there's a third alternative. Mm-hmm. Simply take them over under the direct control of the workers in the bank, plus the customers on the basis
the shareholders,
of one
okay.
customer, one vote.
So each depositor would be a shareholder, in effect.
Exactly. And if you have $1,000 in the bank, and I have $250,000, you get one vote, and I get one vote.
Okay. Wayne, what do you think of that?
What is there about the present system that would stop that from occurring?
It couldn't happen under capitalism. What I'm talking about is getting rid of the capitalist system and establishing a democratic socialist system under the direct control and management of the working class itself.
Okay. So what's the nuts and bolts of causing this to happen? You know, what would you have to change about the Constitution or the or any of the foundational principles of the country? What would you have to change in order to get that to happen?
They all have to be scrapped. I mean, again, the far right loves to carry on about the Constitution. Who wrote the Constitution? Well, were the bankers and the slave owners of their day.
Okay, here what I'm looking for is, you know, we can talk about the far right and the far left and when we use all these words, but what are we going to do to, you know, I think we can all agree that something has to be changed. You know, what are the things that you're going to actually do? What do you actually want to do?
Are you asking how you go about?
Yeah, I'm asking how you go about it. So we have these ideas. How do you actually put them in effect?
Well, in the first place, it can't happen in the absence of a mass movement of working class people, which we're a little bit short of today. But as that starts to develop, and incidentally, you see it in the country where the workers are more repressed than just about anywhere else.
You know,
we've got capitalist system. Also, I'm talking about Iran.
We have a lot of unhappy people. I mean, the Rasmussen poll says that 80% of the people in this country don't think that the government is listening to them at all.
Right, and incidentally,
so how do you change it?
So at some point, you will see a mass movement of working class people, and whenever that starts to develop, then those workers themselves will start to form their own councils to coordinate and advance the struggle of workers. And those workers' councils then will start to take on the role of an alternative form of government and an alternative state form.
Okay, hold on just a second. Can we define workers here, John? I mean, who would that comprise? I mean,
it has to live off their labor, whether it be a teller in a bank, or myself as a carpenter before I retired,
okay.
Or somebody that works for Toyota.
Okay,
General Motors.
Okay, but this would also include like somebody who's self-employed but has no employees, correct? Students.
I think the people that are self-employed would tend to form an alliance with that movement of workers. They would see that that's the force that can really carry society forward.
Okay, so we're talking then basically about roughly 90% of the population if you're also including retirees.
Of course.
Okay. Oh, well, just want to clarify that.
Yeah, there's nothing in my ideology that would eliminate the formation of various sorts of cooperatives to take over the wreckage of some of these failed businesses like GM. I can't find anything that would be wrong with that. And what is there that about the society and the way that it's structured presently that would prevent that from happening?
Well, I'm not talking about having some workers' cooperative.
Okay. I'm trying to understand what it is that how it is that that your plan would be executed. I mean, so you talk about organization and all these things, and all these things I definitely agree with, that the people are going to have to rise up. They're going to have to organize themselves. They're going to have to make it clear how unhappy they are with the system. They're going to have to make it clear that that they own the country, that the people own the country, not the elitists who are running things. I think that we can all agree with those things, but the thing we got to have is an actual plan. You know, once you have stormed the Bastille and you have kicked the bastards out, then what do you do next?
Well, you see, I mean, in the first place, I'm not talking about workers' cooperatives in a sea of private enterprise. It can't work that way, because in that case, the private enterprise will dominate the workers' cooperatives. Just take in the present situation with the economic crisis. Workers' cooperatives are going to be feeling the pinch just like the private enterprise. They will have to either cut their own pay or lay some of their own co-workers off in order to survive.
Which would mean basically buying out the other co-workers, which would cause even more financial hardship.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what I'm talking about is the commanding heights of the economy that dominate production and distribution of goods in the United States and worldwide, but those have to be simply ripped out of private hands. And if you see, the thing is, like Wayne, or I don't want to personalize it to Wayne personally, but I've heard this kind of talk a lot from people in the libertarians and others about the elitists and so on. But let's call it what it really is. It's the capitalist class. But you see, they never want to talk about the class question, because the effects of their policies would really be to strengthen the capitalist class.
Okay, let's talk about the class question. Let's just jump right into that question. It seems to be a sea of words here. So let's talk about the capitalist class. So you want to rip things out of the hands of the people that hold them. I think that there are forces that are trying to rip. General Motors is failing. Smithfield's Foods, another giant corporation, it looks like it's failing. They lost $280 million last year. These large corporations seem to be failing. There are natural forces that seem to be taking them out of business. They're going to fall into these things are going to fall into other hands. You know, why not it be these hands that you're talking about?
Well, you can have General Motors fall into the hands of the GM workers, but as long as everything else is dominated by the capitalist class itself, then the GM workers are going to have to dance to the capitalist tune.
Well,
but I want to get to, hold on, I'd like to get to one question for Wayne, if I may. And
okay,
that is,
John, just a second. We've got roughly 3 minutes here, so yes, can you just let you know, we got to kind of wrap this up here. I'm sorry, this is really fascinating. I wish we had more time, but that's just what we got to do. Okay.
So, I mean, I'd be interested in knowing what Wayne's position is on the question of the right of workers to exclude non-union workers from their workplace. That is, to have union shop clauses in their contracts.
Well, you know, I believe in the right to, and I have publicly supported the right of workers to organize themselves. And
that particular right, the right to union shop clauses, do you agree with that?
Well, that's a part of organizing themselves, is it not?
So you do agree with that?
Yes, sir. I think that I do agree with the right of the workers to organize themselves. The employers have been abusive, but there, I think that we also have to say that there are situations where the unions themselves have become boss-like, and a new boss that takes the place of the old boss.
Well, John and I won't argue with that too much. I don't think being a part of the Carpenters Union. But John, did you want to? follow up with that real quick? Because we got a caller that has a real interesting question here. Did you want to do a short follow up and then I tell?
Oh, go ahead and raise the question.
That's okay, I just want to let you know that news from Neptune. Carl Estabrook has yielded us a little extra time if we want it here today.
Okay.
Anyway, the caller says that the difference. It seems like the difference between urine, what he thinks sort of the bottom line difference in this discussion debate is how productive work is organized, hierarchically or horizontally.
Well,
so I'll each of you respond to that. Go ahead,
Joe.
Well,
in under capitalism, where production is dominated, not maybe all of it, but the domination of production is production for private profit, it has to be done hierarchically. There's no way that it cannot be, because if I am exploiting you, then, and I mean, unless you're either a robot or somebody, you know, or a complete idiot, then I have to be able to dominate you, because sooner or later you're going to try to turn the tables on me. So that hierarchy is inherent to the exploitation of the capitalist system.
Okay, Wayne?
Well, you know, it seems like that everything that I want to do is either... Is either hard work, costs money, or makes somebody angry. And the other thing that I find is that any kind of project, you have to have somebody that finally takes charge of a project. That there is a need for leadership, because somebody actually finally has to be the point man. Who do you go to whenever there is a problem with the with a telephone? You know, who do you? There has to be somebody who is in charge of something. That doesn't mean that that person, you know, is exploitative. You know what I mean? So we have some of these words have, they're words that have that have knobs on them that you can turn. There are sliders that you can say, well, you know, between beneficent exploitation and really a tyrannical. Exploitation. I mean, that somehow that you've got to have some way to eat, and you have to have some way to pay your bills, because they will continue to send those bills to you, and you've got to have something to pay them with. And so there has to be some reward for the effort that's put in. And but it doesn't mean that that one person that does relatively little. Gets a lot, and the other person who does relatively lot gets a little. That's, you know, I mean, so I think that we all have this sense of fairness, and the idea of fairness is probably what you're talking about.
It's not. Fairness has never had anything to do with history.
I think if you get back to
make my point, nobody's talking about a work situation where there's no leadership. The question is, number one, I believe in a collective leadership. Number two, the question is, how is the leadership selected? Is it selected by a few people, in effect, by a few people on the top, and in order to dominate the big mass on the bottom, or do the workers themselves select their leadership? That's the real question.
Just a second. Wayne's going to have a response, and then I'm afraid both of you are going to have just a final statement.
Okay.
You know, whether we call it the workers or just call it the people themselves, you know, call it the general people. I mean, you know, it's. I think to me, it's one word substituted for another word. But all these kinds of things in the political process, where we have a few people making a decision, and then a mass of people in what appears to be a sham of democracy, just simply saying yes whenever they really had no decision, partaking in the decision at all. This is a terrible part. This is a terrible problem with our system, and I think it's a big part of what needs to be changed. Where the people actually do have a voice, that the 80% who say that they're disenfranchised actually get their voices heard.
Okay, John, your final statement.
We're in a situation like we're being led into a swamp, and the question is, what are the alternatives? And the alternative of the far right is actually going to lead us over a cliff, and that is the alternative of cut all public services. Liquidate labor, liquidate the banks, and so on, the Herbert Hoover policies. And I believe that, at least for the immediate, you've got about another $4 or $5 trillion committed to bailing out the banks and the insurance companies. Instead, that money, and my branch of the IWW here is fighting for this, instead that money should be used to bail out the state, city, and county budgets for the social services that they provide. And that is as a first step to building up the public sector under the control of the workers themselves. And of course, the far right is for privatizing all these public services. That is to lead us over the cliff.
Well, I think that...
Okay.
And the ultimate solution, of course, I believe, is socialism under the direct democratic control and management of the workers themselves.
Okay, Wayne?
Well, I think that turning the power back to the people is absolutely essential, and none of us ought to be giving up until we see that day come. And the question is what, you know, is in regard to the matter of control and how much control we have and how distant from us that it is. And the problem with having it come from a federal source is that many of us perceive that their jelly beans have fish hooks in them and that they're going to tell us what to do after we take their money. And we see that just simply, as a problem of liberty that we really don't want to give up, that our government should be local first and then... At what level the more centralized control can be beneficial to us, then we ought to accept it. But it should be kept to the minimum, and as much as what we can do locally, we ought to be doing locally.
Guys, this has been a fantastic discussion debate, and I think maybe sometime in the future we should do it again if everyone's willing. John, thanks so much for calling in.
My pleasure.
Okay, take care. And we're going to take a little short musical break, and then we're going to come back real quick with one last thing, statement by Jermaine Light about the teachers union, and then we're going to be going into Bar Diverse.
Okay.
Thanks, bye.
Bye now.
You like that?
Come and mercy me. Three wise men in SUV. Corporate logo on the side. Air conditioned quiet ride. That thing don't run on French fry grease. That thing don't run on love and peace.
Okay, that was James McMurtry, God Bless America. Yeah, the thing doesn't run on love and peace. What's the rest of the lyrics? That's good. Anyway, Jermaine, you had one last thing to say to our listeners?
Yes, I'd like to clarify 3 points. One, it is not just prescription drugs and insulin shots that the school district is having non-nurse, non-medical, non-licensed employees do, but also internal catheterizations, which means you're actually inserting a catheter into the urethra of the student.
Are you kidding me?
And these, by the way, are done in restrooms, which I think is totally unsterile. Intubations, which are stomach feedings. Correct me if I say something wrong here, Wayne, because you're a veterinarian.
Yeah,
and tracheotomy maintenance. These are some of the examples of things that Muhammad Seymour Education Association members have been asked to, and made to do as a condition of their employment. They've been told if they don't do these things that they will lose their jobs. And another point I wanted to make here is that the IASN, the Illinois Association of School Nurses, recommends one nurse for every 750 students. We have just shy of 1,500. We really should have two school nurses by that recommendation. And not only do we not have two nurses, we only have one, but she is part of her time made to do technology work, believe it or not, on computers and such in her building, as well as also spends time on reading programs. So really, although she is considered to be a full-time nurse. She doesn't work full-time on nursing duties. So we need another nurse, obviously. And so my question is, if Muhammad Seymour wants the best quality teachers and support staff and programs for education, which they do, and I applaud them for this, why don't they want the same for medical procedures and health procedures in the school? Why do they not want licensed nurses doing the medical procedures?
That is just unbelievable with the catheters and the, oh my gosh. Well, okay, Carl, Esterbrook's been very generous letting us go over here a little bit. We owe him one on this. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Illinois World Labor Hour. Next is From Bard to Verse.